had vanished into the oceans. Low-lying areas had become measureless lagoons or lakes. Mountains had crumbled, and new peaks had thrust skyward. The land had rippled as though it were soft and liquid. What had changed across the face of the continent had changed forever. The earth tremors had affected the northern parts of what had been New Mexico, diverting rivers and turning highways into ribbons of broken, corrugated stone. Hun was at the driving controls of War Wag 1, her obshield open. A current of fresh air washed through the stuffy interior of the huge vehicle. Their speed had been slowing down ever since they crossed the deep gorge. Nobody really knew how fast a war wag could go under ideal circumstances, mainly because they never encountered anything remotely resembling ideal circumstances. Ryan had known Hun to push them up over 50 miles an hour when they'd been fleeing a forest inferno started by some suicidal muties near old Wyoming. The average speed was a whole lot closer to 25. Immediately north of Taos, they'd gotten up to 38 miles per hour. Beyond the wooden bridge that had dropped to the mid-20s, and a few miles farther, Hun had eased back into third gear and slowed to around 15.
It's getting worse, Trader!
Bring it to a walk. I'm going up top for a look. Ryan, come up with me.
It was a warm, sticky kind of a day, with the clouds obscuring the sun. Above the mountains on their right, they could see the dense shape of a dark storm. Behind them, linked by RADCOM, War Wag 2 also slowed, keeping station around 200 yards behind. It was far enough to avoid an ambush, but near enough to provide emergency assistance for War Wag 1 if needed. Ahead of them, the two men could see what had worried Hunniker.
Switchback time.
The relatively level pavement disappeared a quarter mile ahead of them, and was replaced by an undulating series of dips and bumps, some of them 20 feet high. At the bottom of the nearest hollow, they could both make out the glint of water, which probably meant swampy ground.
I won't get over some of them, but I don't relish getting us stuck in this kind of place. Taos is the nearest bill. I guess there's plenty of locals that would welcome some killing.
In their conversations with ferrymen and some of the sec men, the recurrent theme was the danger from hostile Indians, who were the scattered survivors of Carson's massacre at the old Pueblo. Ryan stood up, waist high out of the top of the wag, and braced himself against the pitching and jolting. He tried to make out what the ground was like on either side of the ruined highway, deciding that it could be passable.
Hey, Beulah! How much farther before we're due to turn off toward the mountains?
Close. Any sign of Kester?
Both the trader and Ryan peered ahead.
Hun! Stop her while I check things out.
The trader scanned the area with a battered pair of Zeiss glasses. Ryan spotted a lone coyote head and tail down, scurrying along a shallow ridge a half mile to the west. Apart from that, there was no sign of life anywhere. Not even a buzzard circling optimistically overhead.
See anything?
Nothing. If there was a town there once, it sure ain't there now. Can't see no sign of any road going east, neither.
Want me to go on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Left or right?
Right's clearer.
A couple of hours later, the trail became so rough that most of the two crews got out of the wags after the trader gave them permission. They preferred to walk rather than ride in the sickly, sweltering metal boxes that the war wags had become. Speed had dropped to a little less than a steady walking pace. JB had tugged his fedora down low over his eyes and knotted a scarf around his mouth and nose to make breathing easier on the dusty path.
Must have been like this in the old frontier days in the Conestoga wagon.
Yeah. Fireblast, all this dust. They were ox drawn, weren't they?
Mostly oxen. Some mules, not many horses. Funny, most old vids show horses pulling their canvas-top bags.
You told me once that a lot of the cowmen were black, didn't you? Never see that on the old vids, neither.
The wags were now going due east, with the lowering sun at their backs. The trader was sitting out on top of War Wag 1, his head bare, smoke curling from his cigar. He looked completely relaxed.
Look at the old bastard. Like the baron of the whole fucking world up there on that wag.
If he wanted to be, I guess he could. I never met anyone like the trader.
And you never will.
It took them two whole days to cover the miles into the foothills of the mountains. Beulah was delighted to find that the rough map that Ferryman had given her was accurate. It had showed the breakup of the highway, as well as the point where the forest began to encroach toward the road. If there had been trees in close a few miles farther back, the journey would have come to a sudden halt. As it was, the war wags were able to move back onto the ribbon of highway. The seismic devastation lower down on the plain wasn't repeated in the hills, and they picked up toward 10 miles an hour. It was early in the morning of their third day that the first Indian was spotted. He was a lone man with ragged trousers, bare-chested, and clutching what J.B. swore was a 19th-century Springfield carbine. He stood for a few moments in clear sight of the waking camp on a steep slope above a rushing stream of clean water. By the time that the nearest guard had shouted a warning and begun to draw a bead on the intruder, the Indian had vanished again. Trader put the crew on condition yellow. The finest scout on either war wag was a rear gunner in one named Garcia. He had once kept a campfire crew entertained for an hour while he tried to explain the mix of grandparents that had resulted in his dark skin, blonde hair, and eyes so dark that they almost disappeared in their sockets. Ryan couldn't remember that complex web of relationships, but he did recall that there was a bit of Crow-Indian in there someplace. Garcia had joined them on a previous expedition south of the Grandy. Now he was out front, kneeling in the middle of the track, the noon sun pouring his black shadow tight around him. J.B. Dix and Ryan stood a few paces behind him. The trader had sent them out to try to check if anyone had been using the old lost highway through the woods. Garcia finally stood up and looked around. He grinned at Ryan, flashing his solitary gold tooth.
Look empty to you, amigo?
Ryan had some skill at tracking, but the dusty, leaf-covered stretch of road didn't share its secrets with him.
Sure does.
Las apariencias engañan.
Come on, Garcia. You know I don't speak that mech stuff.
You must not decide how good a book is by just looking at her cover, amigo. This road, she tells many stories to me.
Wags? Because Carson said the redoubt hadn't been visited by anyone from the Ville, that it was just local tales. If there's wheel marks there, then most likely that bastard was lying to us.
No wags. Not since the long winter, as far as I can see.
What then? Horses?
Ponies, off trail. Shoeless, so you wouldn't ride them on this hard pavement unless you had to. I'm guessing maybe Apaches?
Apaches? This far north?
Sure. Nothing like a holocaust to change the hunting grounds. Lots of the plains people got chilled. Apaches? They live in the canyons. Now they move the ways north. Maybe I'm wrong, but the warrior we seen looked Apache to me. But I know one thing, Ryan.
What's that?
Unless my guess is wrong, we'll see them again before long.
Finally, the trail simply ran out, as all trails eventually do, the track stopping at the bottom of a 60-foot cliff. There was a clearing in the trees, with an open flank to the north and dense forest to the south. Double patrols were set on the southern side, some a quarter mile into the woods, and another line about 150 yards from the wags. If they were attacked, then it would surely come from the trees. The trader called J.B. and Ryan, this time asking Beulah to join the discussion.
Map's still about right. Shows this place is where the main track vanishes. From here you have to walk on for around 4 miles. Kind of steep, I figure. But the scale's not always consistent. Could be more. Doubt it'll be less.
Well, best split up and take a foot party. No more than a dozen. Well armed.
The trader looked at both J.B. and Ryan, and they grinned back at him. The two young men had ridden long enough with the trader to have a shrewd guess at what he was going to say next. When there was the most remote scent of an undiscovered redoubt, the trader tended to get his priorities a little scrambled. Though he was now well into middle age, he became like an enthusiastic young cub. Today was no different. They were in an unknown and potentially very hostile environment, which called for him to remain with the wags and delegate the patrol to either J.B. or Ryan, or to both of them.
I'll go with Ryan. J.B., you stay in command here.
Well, what a surprise, Trader.
The Trader and Ryan were at the front of the supporting group of 9 men and women, with Otis bringing up the rear. There were signs of a massive earth slip. It looked as if there'd once been a well-maintained blacktop leading directly across country from the main road toward Raton and the Colorado line. But the land had reared up and swallowed it whole. Now they stood near the last few yards of that road, which ended in a sharp drop down a sheer cliff. At the other end, twisted and buckled, were the remnants of a pair of dark green vanadium steel sectors. Peachy shook his head and scratched his fledgling beard.
Well, shit. That doesn't look very promising.
An arrow hit Peachy through the wrist, pinning it to his neck, and Peachy went down. Ryan had a moment to see that the feathers on the arrow flights were notched from a gray goose.